Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bond. Hope everyone out there is doing awesome. Had a great weekend. UFC Qatar absolutely delivered, one of the cards of the year, in my opinion, capped off by an Armin Sarukian second round submission of Dan Hooker. Gets himself out of the doghouse, maybe, with the UFC. Is he next for Ilya Topuria now? Should we change up the queue there? Should he get the next shot? Definitely a big burning question coming out of this event, as is the title picture at welterweight. Talked about it so much last week with Michael Chiesa. I thought that was a great show. Appreciate everyone tuning in, going through all the options there. The one we didn't have full clarity on was Ian Machado Gary versus Bilal Muhammad, who would come out of that welterweight contender bout and put themselves in the conversation for Islam Makhachev. That proved to be Ian Machado Gary with a unanimous decision win. He is in a pretty decent spot, but should he be the guy? Should he be the one who gets the first crack at Islam's belt? Those were a few of the topics we will go through today with our guest, an all-time great, a former UFC champion, a former WEC champion, a man who is very much getting into the podcast space now with one of his great new shows, talking to some of his former rivals, taking us down memory lane. It is the greatest bantamweight of all time, perhaps, still. I don't know. You be the judge. Maybe that officially changed that UFC 323. It is Dominic Cruz. Appreciate him being back here on the show. Lots of great insights, technical analysis, all the things you would come to expect from the Dominator. Very much looking forward to this conversation. Appreciate everyone being here. Please make sure to like, subscribe, comment, follow, share, all these different things to help boost the show. We are well on our way. We hit that 5K YouTube subscriber goal that I had for 2025. Thank you to everyone who is maybe new here, who has been supporting the show all along. It means the world to me. Let's keep boosting that. Let's go for 10K next. So I will take a quick break and be right back with Dominic Cruz. Back here now on the Bonfire Podcast with Dominic Cruz, the former UFC and WEC champ. Dominic, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, man. How are you guys? I'm at CPI getting some stem cells, so everything's good for me.
Yeah, is that still on the shoulder, or what are you getting done?
I'm still healing the shoulder, but it's almost done. I can start martial arts pretty soon now. I'm just getting the strength back up, and then I'll be back in the gym training like I always did. But right now, I'm just getting my body, my shoulder, really bulletproof so that it can take the damage of martial arts again. Just lifting and physical therapy, and then the stem cells helps get the body right. I work with the Miracle Hope Foundation, and we give a lot of stem cells to veterans as well. So I really group well with CPI, and you know, they're official sponsor of the UFC too, so anybody who's interested, tune into that.
Yeah. All right. Once you're fully healthy, are you going to be able to train just for the joy? Like, are you able to pull it back and just train at a speed that's going to keep you healthy, but you're going to be happy with, you know, getting it out of your system?
Exactly. Yeah. I'll go in. I'll still fight. I'll still spar, get these guys ready that have fights. But instead of having to do five straight where I'm the guy in the middle and people are switching on me every round, I get to be the guy switching on the guy in the middle now. And that'll be nice.
Yeah, that's the other side of the coin for once. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. Well, I wanted to, you know, very much appreciate you being here. I had kind of three big things I wanted to hit on you, a few different topics that we'll go through on today's show. So for thing one, I just kind of had like the title picture at both lightweight and welterweight are super interesting right now. Multiple potential options. Let's start at lightweight because that was our main event this past Saturday at UFC Qatar. Armin Sarukian comes back, finally fights after pulling out of the fight in January against Islam. Looks great against Dan Hooker. And now the question is, can he be the guy to get this fight? Or is it going to be a lot of talk out there about Paddy Pimblett and Ilya, their history? Justin Gaethje is there wanting his shot. Who do you want to see fight Ilya Topuria next?
Well, I guess there's somebody lined up now, right?
There's no fight announced. There's a lot of talk about the Paddy Pimblett fight. He's moved up to 5 in the UFC's rankings after being originally number 11 after beating Michael Chandler. He's moved up that high without fighting. A lot of talk, but UFC has announced nothing.
So I think that if we're talking about the best actual fighter in the division, it would probably be Sarukian for like style that could beat Topuria. Like if I would look at the style that looks like it would have the best chance to beat Topuria, I would say it's Sarukian. But if we're going to talk about storyline, if we're going to talk about the gate, ticket sales, promotion, so it's either you're coming from an analytical standpoint or you're coming from a promoter standpoint. And when I look at it from a promoter standpoint, it would have to be Patty. When I look at it from an analytical standpoint, it would have to be Sarukian. But you can't. We don't lose as the fans with either of those fights, so it's a win-win. And the one that makes zero sense to me, but that could happen, would be Topuria and Makhachev.
Yeah.
I mean, it could happen too, and we'd still win on that one, right? Because just the small chance that Topuria is the first guy that can actually stop Makhachev from, you know, holding him down on the floor easily for five rounds, that would be why we'd be tuning in to see if that's possible.
Yeah, well, the reason I love having you here is because you, I think, appreciate the analytical side more so than the, you know, drama, promoter, storyline side. I think, totally agree, Armin is the most intriguing threat. Did you see improvement out of, like, his striking, how he mixed everything up? I thought he looked great against Dan, but is he, would that style be as effective against Ilya?
Well, Ilya comes from a grappling background first. He was actually a wrestler, jiu-jitsu artist mixed together first, and Greco, from what I understand. So that in itself makes it a completely different fight. When your first base is grappling, and then you're as good of a striker as Topuria, you're more of a complete fighter. When you're talking about Dan Hooker, we know they can't wrestle out in Australia. Like, you just know it. Like, I'm not saying Volkanovski can't. There's a guy that's shown up pretty strong, but if you look at the history through the numbers, there's not a huge wrestling program in Australia. There's not a lot of that grappling base. They're amazing strikers. They're amazing grit, will, determination, mental toughness, just toughness in general, and very athletic individuals. But you have to have that knowledge of the grappling, and Topuria had that first. So I think that makes the fight different for Armand.
Yeah, it would be a super fascinating matchup. It seems like they don't like each other too much. Do you think Armin has put himself back in the UFC's good graces? I mean, you've been in many title fights. I'm sure pulling out of one is the day before the fight is not something that makes UFC happy, but he weighed in the back as a backup. He's done, I think, three grappling matches and then comes in here and wins a main event. That seems like as much as you could do, I guess.
Well, when you do anything away from the UFC, from my experience, I don't think the UFC really cares. Unless you're fighting for them when they tell you to fight, from my experience, it doesn't really matter what you do. But the fact that he got to finish this last fight, that's what matters to the UFC, because now they have something tangible to work with besides my back hurts and I pulled out. Like, just imagine trying to promote from that. So I always try to put myself in the shoes of the UFC to an extent for all my analysis too. That's why I give you a promoter standpoint and an analyst standpoint, because as an analyst, I'm going to say something totally different than a promoter is going to say.
Yeah.
You talk to Dana, he's going to promote. He's going to say, this guy's the best because he's here. You could say this guy used to be the best and he'd say that, but then he's always going to promote the guy that's there and being, so it's not a real analysis. It's a promotion analysis, right? So it just matters what you want to come from.
From a style matchup, can Patty give Ilya Topuria a competitive fight, or is that just going to be mostly, you know, the most entertaining part will be maybe the lead up as opposed to the fight itself?
I think Patty can give him a run for his money in the first round a little bit because he's so big and durable. But I think that the speed and the fluidity of the boxing of Topuria and the pressure, it's just not, it's not ideal for anybody if you can't grapple. You have to, if you can't create the offensive wrestling mixed in to the striking against Topuria to at least get him to back up a little, it's hard because he pressures so heavy that you have to be able to move him back. So I look at one of the only thing that's going to cause that man to take a step back occasionally is shot attempts. Like the threat of getting underneath his punches.
Mm-hmm. We talked about briefly the Ilya Islam fight. That fight has to be at 155 for Ilya to give himself a true chance, right? Like, him going up to welterweight is not a viable move for him to win this fight.
I don't think so. Just because of the grappling base. I'm not saying it can't be done, obviously. Yeah,
true.
I'll never be that guy to say that. But if we're going to look at just the way the fight would lay out, you know, in grappling, we cut the most weight because we want the advantage of the strength. And there's no question that at 170, Makhachev can put on more size and more muscle than Topuria could. So I like 155 gives Topuria a real good chance.
Yeah, and I would like to keep these guys apart for now. I think they're both so good. They have guys who are winning in their weight class, and especially at 170. I mean, before we get into all the list of contenders here, what did you just think of Islam's performance against Jack Della at UFC 322? Did you see a different fighter as a welterweight who could do different things, or was this just maybe the same guy who cut less weight and added a little muscle?
I see Makhachev makes other guys be different fighters, right, and not vice versa. So I think, and that's been the trend with Makhachev, is he changes fighters. Fighters don't change him. And so they adapt. They have to adapt to his level of grappling, and his takedowns are so good. And then he's a crafty southpaw with range. With those two things together create a lot of problems. He looked the same as he's always looked to me. Like, and if you allow him to take you down, why would he let you back up if you can't get up? That's the thing. Some people who say it wasn't the most exciting fight, this and that. Well, I mean, nobody's gonna let the guy up to get punched in the face if the guy can't get up. You're just gonna stay on top of him like a car, and then just pin him down. That's what he's made it look easy. Why would he change that if he's not even taking one punch for millions of dollars? That's ideal as a prize fighter. And then now he goes into the next fight to make more prizes without injuries, because you're grappled. That's similar to what Marab's doing, which I know we're going to talk about too. But that was the difference between me and Marab too, is all my fights were on the feet. Mostly I had takedowns mixed in, but I wanted to make it so I always was focused on trying to make it as exciting to watch at the same time as winning, like mixing two things together. And Marab's found a way to do that with his grappling style a little bit more than Makhachev has, in my opinion. If you watch Marab's style of grappling, his is like a takedown rally, 33 takedowns or something. And then the guy who's getting up would say, oh, I'm really good at getting up. No, his style is exciting. He's letting you up. You don't even realize it. His job is, he's letting you up to just stay behind you. If somebody's behind me and I'm on my feet, I'm not up. I'm losing. And that's like a misconceived thing. Like, oh, I have good stand-ups. No, he's right behind you on your waist. You're not actually away at all. You're still down. You just think that because you're on your feet, you're up, but you're not, right? Yep. So when you watch Marab, he follows your waist. He follows you up to your feet, and then he puts you back down. And then he follows you up to your feet, and then he trips you another way. And then he follows you back up. And he takes you down. And then when you get tired of going down and up, now he's on top of you, beating you up. And then in between that, he's landed a lot of big punches too. He's mixing in the striking with these takedown attempts. So it becomes, you know, you got in wrestling, you've got the top guy who rides you out, or you've got the takedown artist. Those are the two styles of wrestler you get a lot, right? And it's all up to who likes watching what. I personally like watching a takedown artist more than I like watching a guy who rides somebody out on top position in wrestling. So when I look at Makhachev, he's the guy that rides you out. He gets one takedown in the match, and then you don't get up again, and he just burns the clock, and he just makes it look dominant and easy. So you can't hate on the guy for that. He's just that good. But when you watch Marab, he's doing something like that, but it's actually like kind of crazier to watch. It's fun to watch because while he's staying safe, while he's grappling, he's also on his feet showing you an assortment of different takedowns and an assortment of different punch entrances to set up the takedowns. So that's cool to watch to me, and it's a different wrinkle on the grappling than you see from Makhachev, right? They're both coming with the same approach, though. Out-grapple their opponent.
Yeah. Is it hard to find, like, where you're seeing some of these guys, like, you know, even a Khamzat, too, going back to his fight with Drickus, to find that, like, medium ground of, you know, being too on the side of keeping control? Like, it, as an example, I remember George St. Pierre, after he beat Michael Bisping, said, like, you know, I knew when I got on top, if I gave him space, he would make a mistake and give up his back, and I would be able to choke him. But you need to, like, give the guys the room to make these errors. And that's how grappling sequences, finishes, big ground and pound can happen. Is that kind of like what the most effective approach, I guess, to creating damage, to creating submission attempts on the ground, as opposed to just getting 4 minutes of control time in a round?
I think it depends on whose style you're talking about.
Sure.
Because I think Marab's doing that, what you just said.
Yeah. That's how he got Sean O'Malley, he said, right? Like, I gave him an opening that I didn't in the first fight.
So when I watch Marab, he's just got more, he's using more tools almost, so it makes it a little bit more interesting to watch, because it almost looks like the guy has a chance, but realistically, he's pinned to their back while they're on their feet, and he's got their waist. So it's like tricking, like the guy who's on their feet thinks they're free, but they're not even escaped. In wrestling, that's not even an escape. You get no points for that. You have to break the hands and actually separate. Marab can stay behind you and stay stuck to you like Velcro while you're on your feet differently than a lot of guys. And when you watch Makhachev, he'll keep you on your back. So I think the key for Makhachev, to make it a little bit more exciting for the fans to be more pulled in to how I love it, because I'm a high-level grappler. I understand what he's doing and how difficult it is what Makhachev is doing. I have nothing but respect. I think it's amazing to see how he can do that to people, make things look easy. But I understand also, for the general fan, they want to see damage and more stuff, right? So just I think that would be the next progression for Makhachev. If you could make any adjustment to his game, it's figure out how to stay that heavy on top while ground and pounding and creating damage at the same time. That would be the one thing that I could say that might be more, might pull more fans in, I suppose. But winning is the objective, and he's doing that. And as a prize fighter, it's win and take the least amount of damage. He's doing those two things better than anybody in the world. So I tip my hat to that, man. That's the game.
Welterweight is so good right now. I mean, Ian Machado Gary gets his big win over Bilal Muhammad on Saturday, and that UFC 322 had some big results there. It seems like any of these guys could get a title shot, have an argument. Skill set wise, given everything we just said about Islam, what he's able to do, who do you think has the best skill set to counteract that and maybe give him the most chance of losing a fight, between Ian Machado Gary, Michael Morales, Shavkat Rakhmonov, Carlos Prochas, or Kamaru Usman? Those seem to be the five guys who are really at the forefront of the title conversation.
Man, that's so fun. Do we have any of those matched up right now? Like,
no, they're all...
All five of those are free?
Yeah, everyone's free. Everyone's coming off a win. No one's booked right now.
Okay, say them again.
Okay, so we got Ian Machado Gary, who just beat Bilal Muhammad. We got Michael Morales, who just beat Sean Brady at UFC 322. You got Carlos Prochas, who just beat Leon Edwards at UFC 322. You got Shavkat Rakhmonov, who hasn't fought since beating Ian Gary a year ago, last December. And then Kamaru Usman, who is the former champion, beat Joaquin Buckley over the summer. And he's saying he wants Islam. Islam saying he would like that fight as well.
I like Kamaru Rakhmonov. I like that one.
Yeah.
I like, who's got the biggest win streak at all of them right now?
Man,
Rakhmonov
and Michael Morales are both 19-0 in MMA, and I believe 7 or 8-0 in the UFC. Ian Gary just has his one loss, and it was the short notice fight with Rakhmonov a year ago.
I like Prates and Morales.
Yeah.
But I could give Morales a title shot too, to be honest, because I've seen that guy in the gym. And there's things about him that don't make sense, like the way that he moves. I'm telling you, he's a freak gymnast too. He can do the craziest things. He can really challenge the strength of Makhachev differently than anybody, the strength. Now, the technique is what has not been tested against Morales, like that level of technique with the strength. Yeah. Morales is so athletic and so strong, he's been able to beat even people's technique just with his power, strength, and explosiveness. Whereas Makhachev, he's going to have to really work through step by step to untie the knot that Makhachev puts him in. Plus, Makhachev being a southpaw changes the style a little bit for Morales as well. Honestly, man, anybody in those top five you can make, right? But then you also have the talk of Makhachev going to 55. So the UFC is just in luck.
Yeah. I know. It's an embarrassment to riches.
That's, huh?
It's an embarrassment of riches right now in these two weight classes. You got
That's a blessing for us. I want to see any of those fights. I've been loving watching Morales fight, though. He's just been really fun to watch because it's like he has such an unconventional style to me. It's like just brutal. He's just like a brute. Like he's like the guy that comes over to you and hits you on top of the head like that, you know? And you're like, how is he doing this? It doesn't look super technical all the time, but he always gets it done and he's so powerful. And he covers distance so much. He kind of reminds me of like how Yoel Romero could cover huge amounts of distance with power and explosiveness. He kind of has that athleticism and feel to me without the wrestling background, obviously. But the way his hips are, he's got very strong hips. He's a hard guy to take down. It would be really interesting to see how he does against Makhachev. But I mean, against any of those guys, it'd be fun to watch him. You know, I love watching how unconventional. It doesn't look like things should be working for him the way they do, and he just makes it work, and it's freaking cool. When you watch a Protez or an Ian Garry, it's almost like you can see why they're good. Like they're technically sound, their distance is good, everything looks all like fundamentally sound, right? And then you see Morales and he comes in there and just breaks all the rules and wins. And I love that.
I know. It's crazy. This division's so good. And we get all the young guys now. I mean, Bilal was the only one kind of holding on to a spot in the top five. Usman's gone. Colby Covington's gone. Leon Edwards is gone. Bilal's gone. So it's a new time at welterweight. So we'll see what they do. A lot of fun fights to be made. But Dom, I want to move on to thing two now here. And this is you moving into the podcast space, kind of joining us on the media side a little bit. This felt like an obvious move for you after retirement, but Love and War with Dominic Cruz has been phenomenal so far. You've got your biggest career rivals on there talking about your history. Tell me, first of all, like, when did this idea come into your mind, the format you wanted to do, and how happy have you been with the execution of the first few episodes?
I've been really happy with the first couple of episodes because the guests have been graceful enough to come on with the history that we have. That's right. It takes two to tango, right? And that's in the fight. And that's also to be able to, you know, I think that's kind of, for me, it's kind of what's missing in this world right now is you don't have to get along or agree. Like, I'm not going to say these guys are my best friends just because I brought them on the podcast.
Sure.
But we can still break bread, respect each other, shake hands, agree to disagree even sometimes on mentality. Like some of the stuff Faber said, some of the stuff Dillashaw said, I might not agree with, but I'm not going to, you know, beat him down over it. And I'm doing a lot of growth in it too. You know, it's a new phase for me in the sense of just learning how to communicate with different people. I'm not going to say I'm always perfect and always like coming off as a nice guy. Sometimes my competitive edge kicks in and I can turn into kind of a mean person, it might seem, which is the guy that I showed up, I think, in fights. Like, I think a lot of fans or the general public has only really seen one side of me, and that's the one that goes into war. And that's a very specific piece of me. I focus on synthesizing that anytime I do media, anytime I'm getting ready for the fight, just being perfectly dark and ready to kill somebody or be killed. And it really is that. I know people roll their eyes and go, kill or be killed. When's the last person? I mean, there's a real possibility of this happening, whether people want to believe that or not. Mm-hmm. There's a real, I don't want to, you know, talk about it too much, but as fighters, we have to believe that there is a possibility that you have to really like accept and surrender to that. And when I surrender to the fact that, yeah, I could die and I'm willing to kill that person because they're going to kill me. Once you, to get my mind in that, I have to be, it's just a different, not very balanced, I would say. And so now in the podcast, I get to be that, my actual self, like the person that people might not know. And it's more balanced. You know, they say the yin and the yang. I get to be kind of right in the middle of the two of them is the goal and try to find the neutrality in that. And that's really challenging for me in the podcasting. That's what makes Joe Rogan the best on earth at podcasting to me, is he's so good at finding neutrality. It's amazing to watch him be that. Honestly, it really is. I don't think people know how hard it is to not get triggered at times and then turn into something that doesn't work on the podcast, you know?
Yeah.
So I respect him for that. And I'm learning a lot from, you know, now I'm doing it. I get how difficult it is because it's about the guest. So how, you know, and that's not what fighting is. So it's a whole nother world, but I enjoy learning in it. And like you said, it's an obvious move because I've been doing media, I think, and it crosses over well, but it doesn't make it easy. It's a totally different world. It really is. It really is. It's difficult. It's been difficult for me, but it might seem easy, but I'm very critical of myself. So it's been kind of difficult, but I'm doing my best.
No, that's the way you got to do it. You got to set a high bar for yourself, and you know, it kind of meets that standard. They've been great so far. I mean, you had obviously your IFA, where you had TJ Dillashaw. I believe Cody Garbrandt is next. Is there being one of those conversations that was most meaningful to you so far? Maybe you got the most out of?
You know, I also had Travis Barker on. That was a big one for me. He got real, real deep into stuff. I'd say the most, just how each one has its own touch to it, right? Like, I'd already kind of closed the chapter with TJ and Faber. But if I'm going to be honest, I didn't know if they had any sort of feeling the same way about me, where you can just kind of close the book, right?
Sure.
It takes maturity is the word to be that guy, you know, and not everybody that I fought is a very mature individual, emotionally, mentally. And those guys showed up mature, as meat-headed as they've been in my life. They showed up smart, mature, you know, they got families now. I love, the whole purpose to me was, let's see, I wanted to give a look at the human side of us fighters, because like I said, we don't really show that. You don't bring the family into stuff. We don't really bring the wives into stuff. You don't really bring love conversation into fight week, into any of it. And I think it's a super interesting scale. And I love to learn how other athletes at the extreme high levels are balancing relationships, families, love, because I didn't do it. I went very, very unbalanced. And, you know, Kobe would say he did the same thing, but he still found a way to have a family. Then the question is, does that mean that the family gets left out? I want to learn. I want to know. Like, I didn't have the family because I didn't want to focus. So I knew I would only focus on fighting and then the family might get left behind. Right. So I didn't do that part. I just said, I'm just going to win. And then a lot of people have, like Mighty Mouse has done it. A lot of high level fighters, and it interests me to see how have those relationships gone. Like, have they always been there? When I talked to Dillashaw about it on the podcast, he said, my wife would say I haven't been balanced. And that's kind of my point. Like, it was nice to hear, like, okay, I was kind of onto something when I thought, I don't want to be just fighting 24/7, leaving, like, not focused on my kid or my girl. And just, I knew I would only obsess with fighting and then leave them on the back burner. So I didn't want to do that. So I didn't do it. I just focused on fighting. Whereas he made it both work. And now look, he's got everything he wants on the other end of his career. And now he's learning that next step of finding the balance, how to give to his family, how to give to his wife, how to give to his kid. That interests me. It's like, man, the transitions in this art is crazy to watch.
Yeah, truly. Is it, have you found it more difficult to be, say, like, we haven't seen the episode with Cody yet, but obviously you lost that fight with him, with Faber and Dillashaw, you won the fights, the rivalry, quote unquote. Is it a different mindset coming in, and I guess on that side of the coin with your guest?
I haven't done it. I haven't sat down with Cody yet, but we will. I think the key for me is just to, I'm still very competitive. It's still in me. So it's, I'm never angry or mad or hate these people, but I am very competitive. So even the people that are you might say Dom hates that guy and that guy hates Dom. I guarantee you, I don't hate anybody. Even the people that I dislike the most, I don't hate them. I'm cool with them, but I'm very competitive and I know I can beat them. And so it just kind of shifts me into like a different way of being. The key on these podcasts is to stay neutral. I don't need that piece of me. We're not fighting. I've retired. I could still fight. I'm still dangerous. I could still go to the gym and spar with Cody anytime I want, right? I'm still dangerous in that way, but I don't need to anymore. So it's just kind of setting that aside, being on the podcast, giving the space to him. He's still competing, giving the space to the athlete when they're still competing. And again, it's a very vulnerable thing for me to jump on and talk about a loss, but I lost a favor too, and I showed him choking me out. Now I ended up getting the better of the three, but I only have four losses. You know, there's only so many times that I'm going to have to face the music on that. And I think that that's just what fans want to see from me is me have to be embarrassed. That's right. What, you know, people want to see the best people if they can be humble as they are, as good at being humble as they are at good at being the winner. And I'm doing my best at that, but I'll tell you, it's not easy because I'm a competitive individual. But, you know, when I bring them on, I don't think it'll be a problem for me to just sit with Cody and talk about how it went, break down the fight, break down what was going on with me before the fight, tell him the truth. You know, after that fight, I said, oh, it was the best version of me. Well, because I chose the fight in the version that I was. So knowing whether I was hurt or not, that I signed the dotted line, I don't want to make excuses. But now in this podcast, I can sit with him, break bread, and say, hey, these were the circumstances I was facing before that fight. Did you have any of these problems? And what happened when you became champion, when you started facing these issues as champion? What did you feel when you were put in this position? Whereas now you're supposed to win because you're the champ. How did that feel for you? It'll be interesting for me to, you know, I like to hear from other champions, other how they handle the pressure compared to how I handled it, and then create a dialogue according to that for people in the world to hear that we all have fears, we all have doubts, we all have all these crazy things going on. I think it won't be any different for Cody or anybody else I talk to if they're willing to be vulnerable enough to share the authentic truth.
Yeah, no, it's been great. Anyone who has yet to see this, go to Dominic's YouTube channel, Love and War with Dominic Cruz, and subscribe and watch these episodes. It's great stuff, man. And I think it's just ducktailing perfectly into your analyst commentary career. Do you know what your future with the UFC and Paramount and all this stuff looks like going into 2026 yet? Or I know a lot of people are kind of in the dark. Have you got some answers?
Yeah, well, I'm in the dark. I know I've signed a 3-year contract with the UFC, and I've only used one of those 3 years. So okay. I should be hopefully back. I love obviously watching fights because I think I can give back to the sport so much to the athletes on breaking down how great they are, how special they are, what makes them special, the little tiny intricacies that people might know of how hard it is to do the things they do. I really enjoy breaking that down for the athlete and for the fan to like synthesize it and be able to understand what's going on and educate the fans when they watch. And the UFC, I enjoy being able to support what they've done because they are, I think there's always complaints people are going to have about wanting to make more money and wanting to have more stuff. But at the end of the day, no matter any person on earth, they're going to say they should be making more money. I don't care who you are. Every single one of us is going to say, no, I can make a little bit more. So that conversation is never going to go away. And while there's truth to it in some areas, the platform itself is beautiful, and I love being able to give back to the UFC for giving me a platform to be able to talk on, compete on, put this all out there in the world. It's a brand new sport. They popped the bubble to where everybody followed in that hole, in that exact same hole, which was the politic bubble, where it was illegal everywhere in the United States until the UFC went and talked to the politicians and was able to get us legalized. Yeah. And through that legalization, every other organization followed their lead. And you got to give credit to that part. I mean, that's one of the hardest things in the world is getting into politics and figuring it out, right? And because they did that, I'm here. I get to watch fights and talk about them. And I get to give back to the sport that gave so much to me. And I get to give back to the athletes who are special and show how special they are. So I enjoy doing it. I hope they keep bringing me back. And hopefully the fans get something from it when I'm there too.
No, they truly do. I do for sure. And yeah, you deserve to be in that rotation for as long as you want to be there. So hopefully this new era, we'll see what it brings. No one seems to know.
Hope so. I love it. I love to be there. I love when they bring me. Thanks, Zach. Thanks, Dana. Thanks, Shelby. Thanks, Hunter. Thanks, you know, everybody. Thanks to Fertitas because I sat down and did a deal with them way back. Lorenzo Fertitta came and met me. And man, they've always been straight shooters with me. It just master negotiators. Gotta give them that. Straight shooters, but master negotiators. So it's, you know, be a double-edged sword with them.
Exactly. This episode of the Bonfire Podcast is brought to you by MyBookie. Turkey, football, bad decisions, the Holy Trinity. MyBookie gives you a chance to make it all profitable. This week, MyBookie is loading the table with cash drops, boosting lines, same game parlays, capped off with a bomb of a Black Friday, the return of the lock of the season. This is the bet every bettor talks about because it does not miss. One single game touchdown is all it takes. Bears, Eagles, Black Friday, one trip to the end zone will double your money. It's the simplest bet you'll ever make. That's why I love MyBookie. And if you're watching the game with friends, they'll give you an extra bonus every time one of your friends signs up and makes a deposit. Bring a buddy and stack your account. Well, you guys all win together. Start with the promo code BON, B-O-H-N, when you sign up and grab a welcome bonus with MyBookie. Load up, lock in, and enjoy the Thanksgiving feast with MyBookie. Okay, Dom, before I let you go here, let's talk a little bit about UFC 323 next week. The bantamweight title, of course, on the line, the belt that you are oh so familiar with. Rob Dvalishvili trying to defend it for a fourth time this calendar year. No one has ever done this before. Eight guys have done it three title defenses in a year. No one's ever done four in this calendar year stretch. You've gone through the camps. You've tried to defend the title. How difficult, just from the, let alone the fights, just the training camps, the media, everything this dude's been through to try to do this four times in a 12-month stretch?
Yeah, you know, I think that in the WEC, when I was crossing over to the UFC, I was able to do the same thing, but it wasn't in the UFC, so it's not looked at that way, right? So it can be done, but it is very hard. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm very aware, I know I've done it, but it's hard because you got to stay healthy. The thing for him is he hasn't had a lot of injuries because of his style. Now, the thing that's interesting is he doesn't have the injuries in the fight, but to get in the shape he is for the fight, he's training a lot. He's wrestling a lot. He's doing a lot of live work. You can tell he does a lot of live stuff mostly. And that's where the injuries generally happen. So his health is what's impressive to me. And that's the hardest part, is being healthy going into these fights. And he seems to be just perfectly fine. I don't know how true that is or isn't, but that's generally what makes it so hard, is just, you just get beat down in the camps. The camps are brutal. 5-round camps are brutal. So we'll see. We'll see how he comes into this next one. He's doing it back to back. I spoke to him. He said he was 100% healthy after that last fight. And he likes to stay on the gas pedal, and it's good for him. You know, I had a time when I did that, when I fought Demetrius, Faber, you know, all these people back to back to back. You know, it can get kind of meticulous, because staying in camp 24/7 is just like your body just gets wore out trying to be perfect all the time. You're always redlined, always in super good shape. Your body fat percentage is always low. Your cardio is always high. So it's like it kind of wears your body down over time. So I'll be curious to see how he shows up. The best way I could put it is, if you got a basketball team, for anybody who gambles or watches basketball or football, if you've got a college team, let's say, that had 10 more games than the other team that they're playing in the finals, does that add to the read of the gamble, yes or no? Like, do people gamble differently with those facts being known? I see fighting for the belt no different. When you're fighting these 5-round fights, how many 5-round fights has Peter Yan had before this? Or has he just gone through and just smoked everybody, right? So, like, for instance, when I fought Cody, I had fought Dillashaw, and then I had fought Faber, and then I fought Cody third in that calendar year after a 3-year layoff with my knee surgeries. And so that's, you know, 10 rounds of fighting plus however many rounds I put in the camp. Cody had 3-round fights, I think maybe 2 or 3 3-round fights, and they were all like first round knockouts. I think he knocked everybody out. So he made that for himself, but that is the ideal timing situation that we're talking about. Like, what's the trek like for Jan to the belt? How easy or beat up how much damage did his body take before that compared to Merab? And I think that will have a big part to play in the betting lines and how they show up on fight week is who's more beat up and who's more fresh.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the betting lines, my bookie right now has Merab at -525 and Jan at +310. So huge underdog. Obviously, we've seen this fight before. We saw Merab win with, I think, the most takedown attempts in a single UFC fight in history, around 50. Jan couldn't keep him off him. We've seen what Merab is going to do. But from Piotr Jan's perspective as the huge underdog here, what does he have to do to make this a different fight and potentially win in your mind?
Well, we know the answer to that. You can tell me, what does he got to do?
I mean, to beat Merab, it seems like you're going to have to knock him out cold or choke him unconscious, to me.
Just get taken down 10 times instead of 50, and you'll probably win. Think about that for a second. It's really that simple. Cut 40 takedowns off. Is that possible for Piotr Jan? I think it's very possible. I think it's very possible, you know? The other thing is, I think the fight analytics are the ones who make the takedowns. I don't think they know what a takedown is. So I don't know if that's really, honestly, I really mean that. It's sad. It's depressing that they don't know what a takedown is, but it's okay. Doing the best they can. But he got like something like 30 something takedowns on Sandhagen, in one fight. So it's like, this is what he does. So if you're Piotr Jan, what do you got to do? Well, if I just get it to 10 takedowns instead of 50, I already gave myself 40% better chance, right?
Yeah. How do you do that though with Merab's relentless style? Is it a footwork thing? Is it a distance thing? Like, how do you, this man won't stop. How do you even get space to put your own offense back?
This is the thing that I made my style off of, is feints, fakes to break timing and rhythm, and angles. Now, if you're at an angle, there's no shot. You can't shoot unless they're in front of you. And I think that's why Piotr Jan got taken down so much, because he always fights on a very straight line. It's forward, back, forward, back. There's very little side to side with him. So you have to figure out a way. He's got to figure out a way to move side to side. Got to figure out a way to add it in, the lateral movement, and pull Merab into stuff, you know. Sean O'Malley, it has a style like that that's similar to what I do, like how he does pull side to side, a lot of lateral movement, a lot of footwork, but he doesn't have the wrestling base that Merab has, so he couldn't stuff the takedowns, right? So you got to have a mixture of good takedown defense with the footwork and the lateral movement and angles together. I think Jan's got good wrestling, but the fact that he's on the center line so much, it just makes it easy for Merab to get to the grappling positions. If he's hitting angles and he's moving, it's hard to get a hold of somebody like that. So it's just going to come down to the approach of Jan. I think he's got the tools, but also his habits are very center line targeted. And I think that makes another relatively easily grappling style fight for Merab to create if he wants to. Doesn't mean he's going to be able to do it, but the style fits Merab's style.
Yeah. Worth noting, the first fight was in the small cage at the casino in Vegas. This one's going to be full size octagon. So that could change things. Maybe not, but worth noting, I guess, for this
punch,
fight.
Punch count changes everything too. Yeah. So if you're throwing all body shots to Merab, you're doing all body work and you throw very limited kicks, how does he shoot on you if your arms are going to your body? Now he can't get underneath your arms, right? And his favorite shot is a single leg. So get very proficient at stuff in that single leg. O'Malley had a really good single leg defense. I think you should go back and watch O'Malley's single leg defense. Piotr Jan should copy that. Take away the single leg, force him to shoot doubles, funnel him to double legs, and funnel him to force in that. And then change your punch count from body work to uppercuts and knees and elbows in the clinch. Those are things that can really make a difference for Jan. And he has all those tools. But it's going to take fight IQ and good game planning and good coaching too, I think.
And last thing on this one, Dom, you were humble enough last time you were on the show a few months ago ahead of the O'Malley fight when your good friend John Anik said if, you know, Merab wins, he's the bantamweight goat, all that stuff. Here we are, fast forward two fights. This guy would be looking for 15 straight UFC wins here if he gets a victory. The bantamweight title defense record, this record of most title defenses in a calendar year. Like, does this solidify him not only as the bantamweight goat, but do we need to go start talking about him as, like, with Islam, with Ilya, as the number one pound for pound? Does that need to be a debate as well?
I don't think it's for me to really talk about because I'm in the debate. So sure. It's like, it's hard for, you know, I'll just say that I think it's up to the fans and he's beating a record. So I'll give him that. But I think I have 6 total title defenses. That would mean he'd need another 3. Yep. Excuse me. And let me tell you how hard it is to win 3 titles that I think that matters. I think that has something to say, you know, that I've won that many titles. It's not just doesn't mean anything. No. You got 4 titles to 6. 2 more times is a lot. Is 2 more. Some people can't even get 1 title, much less a title and then defend it again. So I think that matters. But I give nothing but respect for the way he's doing it. Like, it's amazing what he's doing. It's fun to watch. He's entertaining. He's a stand-up human being. He's got a good heart. He's got principles, you know, ethics. He's not in trouble. He's not getting arrested every weekend. He's not putting out crazy stuff on the internet for kids to look at. Like, he's a good individual, good human, an upstanding citizen, you know. So I just love what Merab's doing. And, you know, records are made to be broken. I'm just glad I could be part of what's been in the discussion, right? I'm very grateful for the opportunities I had to be able to, like, be in this conversation at all. But it's up to the fans. Who's that guy to me?
For sure. That's the humble answer. Someone you might not love as much as Merab, have to ask your thought on this card. Henry Cejudo, potential retirement fight against Peyton Talbot. A very interesting fight. I know the UFC was thrilled to make this one just to see where both guys are at. What are your thoughts on this one as a potential Henry Cejudo career finale?
Yeah, I mean, he already did that after he fought me, and then I fought 2 more times when I would have rematched him, you know. But he gets broke. So he's probably broke, so he's fighting again. So, you know, I think he needs the money. Okay. But Talbot's good. Talbot's good. Like, he's a real threat. I think that as long as Henry mixes in his wrestling, if he wrestled as much as Merab does, which he has the tools to do so, I think he would do great against Talbot. But I don't know if he will. I think he might try to stand up with him. So it really just comes down to what Henry decides to do. I think he's good enough to out-wrestle Talbot for 3 rounds and shut him down. Definitely. No doubt in my mind. But if he strikes with him mostly like he's been doing, I think Talbot will create a lot of problems for him if he doesn't wrestle. Yeah, that's what it comes down to.
I mean, it's hard to get the image of that Talbot-Barcelos fight, which was just in January, right, out of your mind. Henry should be able to do that, but who knows? Yeah. I mean, he claims he's got some of the best fight IQ in the game. If you don't go in there and at least try that, I don't know what we're doing here. So we'll see what he attempts. Well, I mean,
you got to remember, he's claiming it about himself.
Sure. Yeah.
What a surprise.
Yeah. Awesome, Dom. Well, are you calling anything more this year? Are you doing December 13th, the fight night, or anything? Or are you done on commentary for 2025?
I would love to take any of these calls that they put me on. Yeah. Put me out, throw me in, coach. Nothing goes
set
out.
As of right now, though.
Yeah, nothing set right now. It's kind of the calm season right now for the UFC, right?
Yeah.
So I'm grateful when they bring me on, and I'm excited to be back onto the next show and call fights. I enjoy being there.
Hell yeah, Dom. Well, we can't wait to see you back. Appreciate your time so much. Happy Thanksgiving. And yes, everyone, as I said, again, go subscribe to Dominic's YouTube channel. Check out his podcast. It's amazing stuff. So thank you,
Dom.
Thank you. I'm going to take a quick break and I'll be right back to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to Dominic for his time. Thank you to my man Kamikaze for producing the show as always. Appreciate him. And appreciate you all being here for this episode. We are gearing up for the final month of 2025. Just 2 UFC events left in this calendar year, 2 left in the ESPN era with the UFC. We are on Paramount in January, and the final traditional pay-per-view right around the corner here, UFC 323. It's all going to be different after this. And we got those 2 title fights as we discussed with Dom there, Pantoja versus Van, Demolish Billy versus Jan. I will be there in Las Vegas for UFC 323 next week. We'll have a preview episode early in the week. Maybe a familiar guest helping us do that. We will see, but be on the lookout for that. And then, of course, all the fight week coverage. So appreciate everyone. Have a great Thanksgiving week if you're celebrating in the U.S. A safe non-UFC fight week if you're anywhere else in the world. And until next week, I will see you all back here by the Bonfire.